Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. As shoppers hit the malls on Black Friday, Walmart workers are staging a strike. Find out why on today's show. Hear about one minimum wage family locally who got a big surprise this Thanksgiving, cooked up by two community leaders. If you're traveling to Mexico or you have family who lives or travels there, be sure to stay tuned for details about a travel warning issued by the State Department that includes a major resort city and major highway in Mexico due to civil unrest there. On our weather report, hear why you may want to grab your galoshes and snow gear next week in portions of our region. And if you're celebrating this weekend, think twice before driving, since the sheriff will have DUI patrols out in force. On our Green Scene report, learn why you may want to think twice if you're approached by petition gatherers this holiday weekend about a ballot measure that would overturn California's new ban on plastic grocery bags. We'll have a women's health warning issued by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration about a device used to remove fibroid tumors in women and why it can actually spread cancer. On Destination East County, hear about some festive events, from a Feliz Navidad celebration with mariachis and tumbleweed snowmen in the high desert town of Pacumba Hot Springs, to festivals with snow in some East County communities, holiday concerts, and much, much more. The second half of our show today is devoted to our newsmakers' interviews with Ann Hoiberg and Marie Johnson, who will be speaking out about international and local efforts to stop violence against women during 16 days of events on this crucial issue. Ann has been working with the United Nations, and Marie is the president of Activist San Diego, which owns KNSJ Radio. So please stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. As shoppers hit the malls for bargains on Black Friday, Walmart workers staged a massive strike at Walmart stores nationwide. Walmart pays the majority of its associates less than $25,000 a year. Forbes magazine recently reported that Walmart's failure to provide adequately for its employees is costing American taxpayers over $6.2 billion in public assistance. Walmart makes $16 billion a year in profits, and the Walton family is worth over $150 billion, making them the richest family in America. Something you may want to keep in mind when choosing where to do your shopping this holiday season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. As shoppers hit the malls for bargains on Black Friday, Walmart workers staged a massive strike at Walmart stores nationwide. Walmart pays the majority of its associates less than $25,000 a year. Forbes magazine recently reported that Walmart's failure to provide adequately for its employees is costing American taxpayers over $6.2 billion in public assistance. Walmart makes $16 billion a year in profits, and the Walton family is worth over $150 billion, making them the richest family in America. Something you may want to keep in mind when choosing where to do your shopping this holiday season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery with an important travel warning regarding Mexico. The U.S. State Department has issued a travel warning due to the continued threat of protests and violent incidents in Mexico. U.S. citizens are advised to avoid road travel within all areas of Guerrero, including along the main toll road to Mexico City and Acapulco. U.S. citizens are also warned not to participate in protests in Mexico, since the Mexican Constitution prohibits political activities by foreigners. Americans are urged to avoid areas of demonstrations, and participating in them could result in detention, deportation, or worse. The region has been rocked by protests over the disappearance of 43 student protesters. Burned bodies found in a mass grave may be those of the missing students, and there are allegations that they were abducted by police on orders of a mayor and turned over to a gang that murdered them. Federal police have arrested the mayor and dozens of others. Mexico's President Enrique Peña Nieto has now called for constitutional reforms to allow the federal government to take over and disband local police departments throughout Mexico, CNN reports. 14 U.S. senators, including California Senators Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer, have sent a letter to Secretary of State John Kerry voicing concerns over the situation in Mexico, according to Reporting San Diego. The letter reveals that 22,000 Mexican people have gone missing over the last 10 years. The senators ask Secretary Kerry to have the U.S. offer investigative and forensic resources to the Mexican government and to see that the perpetrators are ultimately brought to justice. Major protests have been occurring across the region. Demonstrators could block roadways and take over toll booths, the State Department warns, adding that even seemingly peaceful protests could turn violent, so monitor local news closely if you are in that area. Travelers who are already in the region are advised to follow the same restrictions ordered for U.S. government personnel. You can find those on the State Department website. In general, stay indoors after dark, and during the day, the areas nearest the beach resorts are safer than inland regions. The State Department also strongly recommends that U.S. citizens traveling to or residing in Mexico enroll in the Department of State's Smart Traveler Enrollment Program, or STEP program, at travel.state.gov. STEP enrollment gives you the latest security updates and makes it easier for the U.S. Embassy or the nearest U.S. consulate to contact you if there is an emergency. You can monitor the State Department website, and again, that's travel.state.gov, to find current travel warnings and also check the Mexico City Embassy homepage, which has messages for U.S. citizens on the latest emergency and security information. You can get updates as well by calling 1-888-407-4747 toll-free in the United States from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on weekdays, excluding U.S. holidays.
Thanksgiving weekend is among the busiest travel times of the year, and San Diego Sheriff's deputies will be conducting DUI patrols round the clock across San Diego County from Thursday, November 27th, which is Thanksgiving, through Sunday, November 30th. The goal is to get impaired drivers off our roads and prevent crashes that can cause serious injury or death. Deputies arrested 29 drivers for DUI during Thanksgiving weekend last year, and so far this year, 1,404 people have been arrested for DUI by the Sheriff's Department. Sheriff Bill Gore advises, "This Thanksgiving, do the responsible thing and don't drink and drive. Remember, drive sober or get pulled over." For sober rider options, you can take the trolley or check out one of the many options available online. If you are caught driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you will go to jail, the sheriff warns. Also this Thanksgiving weekend, don't forget to buckle your seatbelt. Many car crash injuries and deaths could be prevented with the simple click of a seatbelt. If you're caught not wearing a seatbelt, that's a violation in California, and you could be cited and fined. So for safety's sake this weekend, don't drink and drive, and please buckle up. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
And now it's time for our weather report on East County Magazine. Grab your galoshes and start filling up the sandbags. A deluge is set to soak our region early next week. Moderate to heavy rains are forecast, along with possible flash flooding and snow. National Weather Service forecaster Alex Tardy predicts up to 5 inches of precipitation in some mountain locations, with heavy snowfall possible above 6,000 feet. The storm is expected to hit our region Monday or Monday night, continuing into Tuesday or early Wednesday, bringing the heaviest precipitation since March, and that's good news in drought-parched California.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. California's legislature recently passed a bill signed by Governor Brown to ban plastic grocery bags starting next year. But now, big out-of-state plastic manufacturing companies are trying to block that ban with a ballot initiative. Sierra Club Director Catherine Phillips warns consumers, this holiday season, you'll probably see paid signature gatherers at malls and other public places urging people to sign. The big plastic makers will spend as much as $3 million to pay an army of signature gatherers. The environmental leader adds, some of the signature gatherers may not be forthcoming about what signing the petition would do. They may lead you to believe that signing will help support the bag ban. In fact, the only ballot petition circulating now would place on the 2016 ballot a referendum designed to overturn the statewide bag ban. The ban was established by Senate Bill 270, signed into law by Governor Brown back in September. The bill emerged after over 120 local governments around California had already imposed local laws to ban or restrict use of single-use plastic bags by grocery stores. The bill was supported by a broad coalition, including environmentalists and many businesses, after a compromise was drafted that provides job training for displaced manufacturing workers. Single-use plastic shopping bags are environmentally damaging at nearly every stage of use. They pollute waterways and the ocean, present hazards to wildlife, and create huge quantities of greenhouse gas emissions and other pollution during their manufacturing.
The United States Food and Drug Administration warns that most women should not have hysterectomies or removal of fibroids using a morcellator device because it can spread cancer. A morcellator pulverizes fibroids to allow a surgeon to remove them through a small incision in the abdomen. But if any of the fibroids are cancerous, pulverizing them spreads cancer cells throughout the abdomen. At least 24 women have had conditions that were life-threatening due to the use of a morcellator, according to the FDA. It's impossible to know if uterine fibroids are cancerous until after a surgical procedure is done and a biopsy is completed. Johnson & Johnson, a major manufacturer of morcellators, pulled them off the market in April, and many major hospitals have stopped using them. The FDA is recommending two package warnings. Laparoscopic power morcellators should not be used for removal of uterine tissue containing suspected fibroids in patients who are peri- or postmenopausal, or candidates for removing tissue intact through vaginal mini laparoscopy incision. These groups of women represent the majority of women with fibroids who undergo hysterectomy or myomectomy. Laparoscopic power morcellators also should not be used in gynecologic surgery in which the tissue to be morcellated is known or suspected to be cancerous. One of 350 women undergoing a hysterectomy or myomectomy is found to have previously unsuspected uterine sarcoma cancer. There are other surgical treatment options available for women with symptomatic uterine fibroids. The FDA stopped short of banning the devices, which can help prevent scar tissue in younger women that would otherwise reduce their chances of becoming pregnant. It also reduces recovery time for surgery due to the smaller incision required for morcellation. Despite dangers from the device, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists praised the DFA's decision to stop short of a ban, stating, "We continue to believe that power morcellation has a role in gynecologic surgery." This has been Leon Thompson with the Health Report on East County Magazine.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes some wild Thanksgiving happenings, from a swinging holiday party at Sequan to a Thanksgiving feast for the beasts at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including several holiday home tours, community holiday festivals, Santa at Santee Lakes, and Feliz Navidad celebration with mariachis and more in Hakumba Hot Springs.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
Get ready for the third annual Waddle and Trot 5K run held on Thanksgiving Day, November 22nd at 8 a.m. Pathways Community Church will host the Waddle and Trot, which benefits the Santee Santas and the Santee Food Bank. What better way to work off some calories before savoring your Thanksgiving feast? To register for the 5K or fun run, visit pathways.cc/waddleandtrot.
The swing revival band Big Bad Voodoo Daddy will hold a wild and swinging party on Friday, November 28th at Squan's Live and Up Close Theater in Dehesa starting at 8 p.m. For tickets and details, visit www.sequan.com.
The historic Gold Rush town of Julian hosts its annual country Christmas tree lighting on Saturday, November 29th from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. The festivities include music, crafts, booths, and performances throughout the day, followed by the tree lighting at dark, after which children can visit with Santa and Mrs. Claus. After the tree lighting, you can also stroll down Main Street to the Julian Cider Mill for a living nativity, a longtime Julian tradition.
The Saturday after Thanksgiving, November 29th, is a special day at the Lions, Tigers, and Bears Ranch in Alpine. It is the day the animals celebrate with their version of a traditional Thanksgiving meal. You're invited to join in a special feeding visit at 10:30 a.m. to watch the big cats and bears enjoy their feast. Turkey and fish donations are greatly appreciated. You can also donate a turkey for the cats or fish for the bears in advance. For reservations or to donate food for the feast, call 619-658-659-8078 or visit lionstigersandbears.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Lemon Grove hosts its annual Light Up the Grove bonfire on December 5th in Civic Center Park from 5 to 9 p.m. You can also visit the Lemon Grove Historical Society's Christmas open house at the Parsonage and Lee House, where you can meet Santa and peruse the elves' gift shop. The night also includes horse-drawn wagon rides, games, face painting, and crafts to provide spirited good cheer for people of all ages.
The 19th Annual Alpine Village Christmas Parade of Lights and Snow Festival will be held on December 5th from 6:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. The parade rolls out at 6:30 p.m. from the West Victoria and ends at the Alpine Creek Town Center at 1347 Tavern Road in Alpine, where a snow festival complete with real snow starts at 7 p.m. Festivities include a visit from Santa Claus, carnival rides, food, and vendors.
Hakumba Hot Springs closes out its centennial year on Saturday, December 6th, with Feliz Navidad celebration. The event takes place at the Highland Center, 44681 Old Highway 80, from 2 until 5 p.m. Admission and parking are free. Feliz Navidad showcases the festival mariachi music of the world-renowned Mariachi Garibaldi Performing Ensemble from Southwestern College, the first college in the world to offer a degree in mariachi music. Visitors and town residents will join a luminary procession to the county park for the lighting of the Christmas tree and to sing carols, Hakumba-grown tumbleweed trees, snowmen, and other snow creations will be on display throughout the community. Hakumba was once known for tumbleweed snowmen, and the tradition is being revived. Festivities also include a piñata for the children, craft vendors, baked goods for sale, and raffle items including bountiful gift baskets, bicycles, and Christmas quilt. Complimentary refreshments will be served. For more information, visit HakumbaHotSpringsCentennial.org.
You're invited to an afternoon of Yuletide fun watching animals open their Christmas presents at Lions, Tigers, and Bears. The Animal Rescue Facility hosts its annual Christmas Festival fundraiser on Saturday, November 6th from 1 to 4 p.m. You can also do holiday shopping at more than 40 vendor booths, enjoy food from Descanso Junction, and visit Santa Claus. In addition, a new bear habitat will be unveiled during the December 6th event featuring rescued bears Albert, Cherry Bomb, Teddy, and Baloo. To buy tickets or to donate a Christmas tree to give to the animals for play on this special day, visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The Lakeside Chamber of Commerce will host the 16th Annual Spirit of Christmas on Saturday, December 6th, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Main, that's M-A-I-N-E, Avenue, between Parkside and Laurel in Lakeside. This free, fun-filled family event will include a community tree lighting, visits with Santa, vendor booths, kids' activities, food, music, and entertainment by local bands and schools. The evening will kick off with the arrival of Santa and the lighting of the community Christmas tree at 5 p.m. by the Lakeside Fire Department. Then guests can saunter up and down Main Street to experience visits with Santa, vendor booths, crafting tables, delicious eateries, kids zone, and holiday music. Children are encouraged to bring letters to Santa and drop them off in the special mailbox with a delivery just to the North Pole. Remember to close a self-addressed stamped return envelope so Santa can send a letter back. The special North Pole mailbox will be on site at the Lakeside Historical Society on Main Avenue until December 24th. For more information, go to lakesidechamber.org.
The Lakeside Historical Society will be hosting its annual holiday home tour on Saturday, December 6th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. There are three decorated homes and one business on this tour and many antiques and collectibles to enjoy viewing. Tickets can be purchased from the History Center, 9906 Main Avenue, from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, or on the self-guided tour. Also, beginning on December 1st, the Historical Society has its Mrs. Claus Christmas Resale Shop open for shopping for unusual holiday decorations. For more information, call the History Center at 619-561-1886.
Seroptimist International of Borrego Springs will also hold its holiday home tour on Saturday, December 6th from 4:30 until 8:30 p.m. You can tour five lovely homes in the Borrego Valley, each uniquely adorned for the holidays. From ultra-modern to old-school, each home will reflect the distinct decorating style of the homeowner. All proceeds go to fund educational scholarships for Borrego Springs graduating seniors and youth organizations.
A free choral concert, Bright Mornings, Silent Nights, will be presented by the Pacific Cares and Cedar Center Chorus on Saturday, December 6th at 2 p.m. in the College Avenue Baptist Church at 4747 College Avenue in San Diego. The concert features Christian and Jewish holiday favorites as well as secular music.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present a joyful holiday music celebration on December 7th at 3 p.m. in the College Avenue Baptist Church, 4747 College Avenue, San Diego. The performance will include Vivaldi's Gloria and Robert Shaw's The Many Moods of Christmas. The East County-based San Diego Festival Chorus is in its 14th season. The 90-voice, 48-piece orchestra has performed Vivaldi's Gloria on European tours. The Many Moods of Christmas is a chorale arrangement of traditional Christmas music by Robert Shaw, former conductor of the San Diego Symphony Orchestra. You can hear selections from the performers and purchase tickets at sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
Santa arrives at Santee Lakes on Sunday, December 7th, in a celebration that runs from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. There is fun for the whole family, including snow sledding, carnival rides, inflatable jumps, boat rides, arts and crafts, food, and s'mores. For details, visit santeelakes.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like to add it to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today we are going to be talking about a very important issue, which is violence against women. We are in the middle of 16 days of international activism against gender violence. There are activities in 150 nations around the world from November 25th through December 10th, which is Human Rights Day. And today I have two very special guests joining me. My first guest today is Marie Johnson, who is the president of Activist San Diego, which owns KNSJ Radio, and they recently put on a very important presentation called The Many Faces of Violence Against Women. Marie is also a survivor of domestic violence in her own family. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Marie.
Thank you, Miriam, for having us. And Activist San Diego put that forum on, The Many Faces of Violence Against Women. It was in partnership with the United Nations Association of San Diego.
Very good. We are also very fortunate to have with us today Anne Hoiberg, who is the past president of the United Nations Association of San Diego. She's been a career research psychologist with the federal government, past president of the League of Women Voters here in San Diego. She has led delegations to United Nations conferences, and she's currently serving as the president of the Women's Museum of California and the International Museum of Human Rights at San Diego. And she has been an active speaker on many women's issues, including violence against women. Anne, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Anne, can you start by giving us a definition of what exactly violence against women includes? At the international level, I know this can be many different things.
In 1993, the United Nations came out with a declaration on the elimination of violence against women. And in this declaration, it defined all forms of violence against women. Now, it does include physical, sexual, and psychological abuse of women, and it can occur in the home, in the community, and perpetrated or condoned by countries. So it's all-inclusive, this definition of violence against women.
Now, the United Nations issued a declaration back in 1993 to stop the violence against women. What progress has been made on that front since then?
Well, every country, as members of the United Nations, were encouraged to create its own form of legislation ending violence against women. As we know, all forms of violence against women are the most pervasive human rights violations on earth. It occurs in all countries. So every country was encouraged to create its own form of violence against women acts or mm-hmm. policies. And the United States did create its own Violence Against Women Act in 1994, which has been reauthorized until most recently in 2013.
So in 2013, what happened in Congress?
Congress finally decided to enact the Reauthorization Act of 2013. Unfortunately, it took 16 months until they could agree to enact this very important piece of legislation.
So violence against women includes so many different things. Certainly what many think of as domestic violence, or the new term for it is intimate partner violence, is one form of that. There's violence on campus, such as the, you know, what some are calling the rape culture at San Diego State right now, where there's been 7 rapes on campus, many of them involving these fraternities this semester alone. Internationally, it can include things like honor killings and forced early marriages and genital mutilation. So it's really a broad list of things that are happening to women. Now, Marie, you as a child witnessed domestic violence in your own family growing up, which must have been, you know, a horrific thing for any child to go through. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and how that has impacted you later in life?
The impact is great. The experience is horrific. You wonder about your own worthiness. You don't frame it in your mind at that young age, but it's there in your contribution to the way you're being treated or you see others treated. Now, I just turned 78 years old. That imprint in childhood is placed in our subconscious and our minds and our wiring at about age 4. And to overcome that is quite difficult. So at my age, even though I feel confident about a number of opinions that I have and experiences, that comes back to haunt me when I made a mistake, for instance. That comes back to haunt me that I am not that good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think of this as physical violence, which certainly it is. One can heal from a physical scar over time, but I think the emotional scars from women I know who've been through this certainly seem to be much longer lasting and harder to overcome. It does diminish people's self-worth and their self-esteem. And in your experience, what is the human cost of this, not only to the parent, usually the wife or the mother that this is happening to, but to the children, people like Marie here?
Well, that's the true tragedy, because at least 7 people, in addition to the victim, will be traumatized. Mm-hmm. How can we put a price tag on this form of trauma that children will live with for the rest of their lives?
If they live at all. I had a friend once where the children were murdered and she tried to leave and that's what happened. So it's a terrible situation that these women find themselves in. It's, do you stay and put up with this horrific abuse? And yet there can also sometimes be risks in leaving. How should a woman weigh that? What do you do if you're in that kind of a dire situation, Anne?
Well, that is the true test of how to address this horrible problem. And how can a woman leave when she has children, when she has no money, when she has no resources? So it's very important for her to build some form of a support system, mm-hmm. a good friend, her parents, anyone who could possibly help her, and then to turn to society. What do we offer in our community to help her, like the Family Justice Center?
And law enforcement, there certainly are some options like getting restraining orders and so forth.
Exactly. That is absolutely crucial. And those temporary restraining orders are available at all of our court houses and also at the Family Justice Center.
Do children who witness violence in the home become more prone to repeat it themselves? Does violence beget violence in their own lives?
Oh, that's a perfect question because, yes, of course, our parents are our role models. And if we see a father beating the mother, of course, that's imprinted on the child. And how does that child become a good parent when he is married and has children?
How do we break that cycle of violence if there's a man listening out there who has perhaps been abusive at times and realizes that's wrong and wants to get help? Where can he go to try to get some help?
I think, again, the Family Justice Center also addresses what the man is going through. There are programs here in San Diego. I'm thinking specifically of the Men's Leadership Forum that helps men who might have problems trying to figure out what is it like to be a man, mm-hmm. and how do we train or educate boys to become the caring, nurturing man that
right.
most men are.
What are the appropriate ways to handle stress versus the inappropriate ways?
Yes.
Okay. Marie, do you believe that gender stereotyping plays a role in all of this? You know, the old idea of male chivalry, for example, that the woman is helpless and she needs the guy to open the door or lay his coat down on the puddle for her. Is that, in the long run, is that more harmful than helpful?
Well, I think it has consequences, and it's hard for us, I think, to question that again because of the way we've been brought up and how women think they should be
powerless.
What I think is fascinating is that many men perceive there's a man's box And there's a certain way that society perceives men to be, whether it's being macho or being the protector, the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. What do you do if you don't fit in that man's box? Mm-hmm. How do you become an effective man with high self-esteem if you don't measure up?
Yeah, self-esteem is an interesting point. I think particularly in this economy where we've certainly seen many men who found themselves out of work, they're not fulfilling that traditional male, you know, I am the breadwinner, bringing home the mastodon role that I think goes all the way back to early mankind probably. To what degree does that sort of thing fuel these kinds of problems in the home?
Interestingly enough, one of the highest risk factors for a man to become violent in the home is if he has an unstable work record, unstable employment. Here's a man who probably is very frustrated. He doesn't fit into that man's box of being the breadwinner. So this is one of the major risk factors for women who do become a victim.
What are the other risk factors?
Well, alcohol, drug abuse are all factors. Having a gun in the home is also a risk factor. History of abuse, of course, and growing up in a family of abuse, you know, pertaining to history, and also his own history of being abusive.
I want to read some statistics here. We may think of this as a problem that happens, you know, somewhere else to somebody else. But in fact, right here in the United States, 1 in 4 women will be a victim of domestic violence every year. And 1 in 5 will actually be sexually assaulted. That's according to the Department of Justice's Office of Violence Against Women. And in the last decade, more women were murdered by their husbands or boyfriends than died in the 9/11 terrorist attacks and the number of soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan all put together. That's a really shocking statistic.
It is shocking because if you do the math, it boils down to 3 women are murdered every day in the United States by a husband or boyfriend.
Here's another frightening statistic from the World Bank. They report that women between the ages of 15 and 44, these are young women, are at greater risk of rape and domestic violence than they are of experiencing cancer, car accidents, war, and malaria combined. What is the answer? I understand, obviously, that's a simplistic question. No doubt there are multiple answers, but what do you believe needs to happen? I'd like each of you to answer that question to help reduce these terrible statistics.
Well, of course, awareness is crucial. Everybody needs to be aware of what's going on in our communities. I think what's really horrendous is the fact that so many children are traumatized. So first of all, we must do all we can to protect the children in our homes who will be victims of violence. Even if you look at the huge number of children in our country, 76 million children, 46 million of those children will be traumatized by some form of violence this year.
So if you're a woman in this situation or you know a family that's in this situation, what should you do?
Well, first of all, we do have to become active bystanders. This is one of the big pushes that those of us involved in this issue are working on. Whether it's occurring next door to you, you must step in. It's no longer acceptable to just sit back and say, well, she made her bed, sleep in it.
Yeah, he's beating his wife and it's none of my business.
Right. I think, too, that we need to be on the alert on how we can protect the children in that family. Do we call children's protective services? What role should we really play? And I think we just have to become actively involved.
Mm-hmm. Marie, what do you have to say?
Well, I'd like to talk about implicit bias in our culture. Positive or negative mental attitude towards a person, thing, or a group, mm-hmm. something that gets into our unconscious level so that we need to be careful about the perceptions that we have and educate everyone. For instance, a common thought is if a woman is raped, it's her fault.
Yeah, she drank too much, you know, on campus, that somehow it's okay for these men to take advantage of her.
Yes. And in our culture, the history of women has been, they in the past haven't had the educational opportunities. This is quite a while in the past. That's changed. But other things that have made women subservient, and that has crept into our culture, that I think the automatic thought is that women are not as capable. They're lesser in various things that they can do in society. And we have to be aware of that, again, in our subconscious, even though we might think that we know better and yeah. we don't think that way, how we react to certain phrases automatically contradicts what the way that we think we're going to react to something.
What about
talking about that in culture, being aware and questioning why we have certain perceptions and automatic perceptions is part of that education yeah. in turning this around.
What about bias in advertising, in media, you know, in the movies, what we see on TV? How pervasive a problem is that?
Well, certainly in media, magazines, movies, and the role of women as an object is a big problem, and we need to speak out with one voice against that.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to this implicit bias and what we understand in our language, that is what advertisers and people who groom politicians, people who mm-hmm. might have a position in power, they know what phrases, how to allude to certain things to get a certain reaction from the general public.
Yeah, so portraying women as sex objects, for instance, whether they're selling cars or aftershave or whatever it may be, this sort of sexualization.
It's continuing that in our social construct, yes.
Mm-hmm. If a woman is in this situation right now who's listening to this, where can they go to get help?
Here in San Diego, we have the Family Justice Center.
And I have a phone number for that. There's a San Diego Domestic Violence Hotline, and that number is 888-385-4657. And there are, I understand, a number of shelters countywide.
Yes, we have at least 10 shelters that are run by the Center for Community Solutions. And that also is an important organization that's in the phone book and can be reached, and they will help. They're mm-hmm. especially helpful for people who are victims of rape and also victims of intimate partner violence.
Yeah. And, of course, you can always call 9112 if you don't remember that number and you're in a crisis situation. Please do call 911, and they can direct you to where you can get some help. There are certain times of year where violence against women seems to be more prevalent than others. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the saying is that if you need a shelter on Super Bowl day, you're going to be out of luck because all of the shelters will be totally filled up.
Why is that? What is it about that sporting event that seems to bring out the worst in men?
Well, unfortunately, alcohol plays a major role in those victims' circumstances. And so we, of course, are always cognizant of the fact that we need to rein in a little bit on the drinking mm-hmm. on that special day for many men, Super Bowl Day.
The holidays is another time, I understand.
This is correct. The holidays, too, seem to bring out unfortunate incidents such as intimate partner violence.
Why is it that when a woman does come forward, so often she just isn't believed? We saw this, I think, at first with some of the allegations against Bob Filner, which was harassment, you know, sexual harassment. Now we're seeing the same sort of thing with Bill Cosby, where some of these women had come forward, at least one of them said he raped her, reported it to the police, you know, years ago when it happened. Some of the others told other people at the time, but they were afraid to come forward. And it took a man, a comedian, speaking out about Bill Cosby's, you know, all these alleged rapes, before more women came out of the closet. Now I understand there are 13 of them claiming that he actually raped them or sexually assaulted them. Why do you think society, you know, the social media goes abuzz when a man talks about that, and yet the women tend to get ignored?
Well, in those cases, fortunately, the truth did come out, and I think now we're having to deal with that. And it's unfortunate that many years ago, women were very reluctant to step up, and many women felt it was their fault. Many women also felt in the Bill Cosby case that he was really dedicated to helping her in her career.
And we should put in that Mr. Cosby has not commented on these for the most part. A couple of them I think he denied early on. And later when he was asked by a reporter on national television, there was just stone cold silence. And he later said he doesn't want to respond to innuendo. He told the reporters they should do their fact-checking, but at least one of them said he did, and he went back and he fact-checked and found out that these women had told people about it at the time. There were records, you know, and that maybe it's Mr. Cosby that should come forward and be accountable.
I'd like to put in a word about historical context.
Please.
When we talk about why women aren't believed, and historically we've not been considered on an equal footing with men, but actually intellectually inferior. A major source of temptation and evil, Greek mythology, mm-hmm. Roman law, early Christian theology have presented this view of women at the gate of the devil, sting of the serpent, and so forth. So again, that is in our culture.
Yeah, religious doctrines of many different religions, actually.
So why should women be believed if we have that perception of women who should be subservient and with that that kind of a background being evil and so forth?
Now, I mean, there seems to be a lot of focus on telling women what they can do to prevent being raped or assaulted. Again, these stereotypes of, well, if you just wouldn't dress too provocatively, then this won't happen to you. But what about educating men, young men and boys, in how to properly respect and treat women? What does it take to make this happen?
I think all of our school districts are concentrating on this area, and it really stems from the fact that bullying has become a major issue in our schools. And this, of course, will impact how boys learn how important it is to be respectful of not only their fellow boys, but also the girls in their classroom. So I think we're going to see some major educational shifts. We've also passed some legislation here in California that will go into effect in January concerning having more education in our middle schools and in our high schools about sexual assaults and about sex trafficking, too, which is another form of violence against women.
Yes, it is. Speaking of schools, what about what some students are now calling a rape culture at San Diego State University? Certainly it's not the only campus to be accused of this. The University of Virginia just closed down a fraternity there. But there have been 7 rapes, at least alleged, on San Diego State University's campus just this semester. And a number of these have involved fraternities and drinking parties and so forth. And those fraternities are currently on suspension for their social activities. But what is it going to take to make this situation stop right here in San Diego at one of our largest universities?
Well, all campuses must have a coordinator 9 who will really work on educating students during orientation about what it is that's expected of them as far as responsibilities and their rights.
Is that enough? I mean, how do you deal with the fraternity problem? I'm sure most of them probably went through some kind of orientation like that, but it doesn't seem to have helped.
I think now, with the Title IX coordinators working so diligently on this problem, there are now 82 universities that are being investigated by our U.S. Department of Education. If a school is receiving federal funds, and most all are, mm-hmm. they must submit their reports on what they're doing to prevent sexual assaults on campuses.
Another area where there's a very high rate of sexual assaults is in the military. I believe the statistic is something like 1 in 3 women in the military have been sexually assaulted at some point in their career. I understand that you've actually done some teaching in this area to members of the military. Anne, can you enlighten us?
Well, back in the early 1980s, the U.S. government was determined to really address the problem of sexual harassment. This was a new term to many people. Mm-hmm. And so all federally funded agencies were mandated to put on prevention of sexual harassment programs. So as one of my collateral duties as a research psychologist was to teach these classes throughout the various military facilities here in San Diego. And I think it was quite an effective program here in San Diego.
How recently was that?
It started in 1981, and I believe it continued even to this day. All supervisors must have training in creating professional environments and preventing all forms of sexual harassment and sexual assaults.
What more needs to be done? Because despite that program, which no doubt did some good, there's still a very high rate of sexual harassment as well as assaults in the military.
Well, this is true. And recently, President Obama came out with a statement that it must end. There will be court martials. There will be firings. Mm-hmm. It must end, period. And when a president or chief of staff issues a directive like that, all senior military personnel must take it seriously or their careers will be on the line.
Very good. We are now in the middle of 16 days of activism against gender violence, which, as we mentioned earlier, runs from November 25th through December 10th. What more can you tell us about that?
It is hoped that every day during those 16 days that we will plan some program or endeavor to increase awareness about how important it is to end violence against women and girls. Of course, we should end all forms of violence against women, girls, and boys and men.
Right. We should mention that while we've talked primarily about violence against women, gender violence can occur to men as well.
This is true. We have become a culture of violence, as we can see, as a result of many of our sports and as a result of drinking and drugs. So anything we can do to end this form of human rights violations is something that all of us must take to heart and really work on ending it.
Very good. Where can people get more information about these efforts?
Well, of course, everybody should be Googling the program 16 Days of Activism Against Gender Violence and to see what all the countries who have come on board with this program, what programs they're all doing. So during this 16 days, we will have events here in San Diego that will be addressing all efforts to end violence against women and girls.
Very good. Marie, will Activist San Diego be posting any of these local events on its website?
Yes, Activist San Diego, and there are events scheduled currently.
And that website is
activistsandiego.org. And there's a calendar online, yes.
I would like to ask each of you what final words you would like to offer to our listeners on this very important subject of violence against women.
At the Women's Museum of California, we have a very disturbing exhibit called Exposing Scars, Giving Abused Women a Voice. And this exhibit displays photographs and various pieces of art related to what women and their children have gone through resulting from intimate partner violence. So during this month until the end of November, we will have this exhibit up, and you're all encouraged to come to the museum. We're also encouraging you to check our website, womensmuseumca.org for any events that we have scheduled for this time period until December 10th.
Marie, how about you? What are your parting thoughts today?
Language matters, so pay attention to how things are framed. This is in a broader perspective. We're talking specifically on violence against women, but we're talking about, again, implicit bias and language that is in all areas of society. So when we hear something that sounds innocuous, like collateral damage, for instance, and talking about the effects of war, for instance, that's just a nicer way of putting what's happening as far as killing and maiming and injuries.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with our language and our words regarding this particular topic of violence against women. And also, if one thinks that you're not part of implicit bias, again, unconscious, there is an IAT, which is an implicit association test that Harvard has online to see just how you score on your own internal subconscious wiring.
Very interesting. And I would like to add also that if you think this can't happen to you, it can happen to any woman. When I was a young woman working in Sacramento at the state capitol and walking to the bus stop one night, a man tried to assault me. And thankfully, I had taken a self-defense class that the state had offered free to all of the women in the capitol, and I was able to, you know, twist, kick, scream, and escape. And it's a shame that women need to resort to taking self-defense classes, I think, and that we don't find a way to instill more responsibility in the men. But until that happens, that's certainly one other option that women can consider to protect themselves. I want to thank both of you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you very much.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.